Hello, all. We are Taking It Down, the Alabama Takes website's pop culture discussion podcast. I'm your host, and joining me in a second will be my dudes, co-host Adam Morrow and Donovan Reinwald. They're itching to give their input on trailers, new songs, and they're probably itching to give their input on the Charlie Kaufman Netflix movie I'm thinking of ending things, but I'm not going to let them. We are going to put that off. We will talk about that next week because someone did not do his homework. I'll let you figure out who that is. Let's get Adam and Donovan in here to greet the listeners as if they haven't already. Guys, what's up?
Hello, everyone. I watched the Charlie Kaufman film, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, this week and had just, I'm bursting with opinions that I'm probably going to forget over the next 7 days. So
there's this thing called pen and paper.
Hi, everybody. I also watched the Charlie Kaufman film, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, this week, and I'm also bursting with opinions.
Yes.
I did write some of them down, but I think I've lost the notebook.
We will cover that movie next week, but in the meantime...
Here's the thing about it. Canonically, it's all an outtake from Fargo Season 2 and Fargo Season 3. If you'd watched the movie, you'd know what I was talking about.
Well, I watched Fargo Season 2 and 3.
It's Fargo canon. You'll see why.
I get some of that reference. Now, I'm guessing because Jesse Plemons, but anyway, more on that next week. Sorry if anyone was expecting that. I don't guess anyone was, but you two guys.
Did you announce it on the pod last week?
My feelings don't count.
Okay. I don't think I announced it on the pod, but I'm announcing it for next week, so we're married to it now. But Adam's feelings always count. That's why we don't talk about the Chiefs on here.
Why? Because it makes Jeff happy, which that hurts my feelings?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But talk about things that we will commit to for sure, and we will commit to this movie next week. I just need to watch it. In 3 weeks, our September 29th show will feature a segment where we will answer any and all questions. Basically, I guess we'll answer all of them. Get them to us via email at thealabamatake@gmail.com or any social media account that we are on, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can just DM us at any of those, and we'll compile those questions. Also, pretty big announcement, our October 27th show will be our first Taking It Down book club. Throughout the month of October, all three of us are going to be reading this new release, The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones, which from my summation is about four American Indian men facing a struggle for their lives. It's been called a blend of horror and literary writing. So those are the things you can participate in and join in. September 29th, mailbag show. October 27th will be our book club show, The Only Good Indian.
I think so.
It's going to be a good October reading, I think.
I think it is, and that's my goal with it. I wanted to make sure to pick every October, at the beginning of October or at the end of September, I pick a book. I try to wrap up what I'm reading as fast as I can, and I pick a book that is supposedly scary. And few have really gotten me into that real scary place of mine. Usually books for me are either slightly scary and horribly written or not scary.
You're reading
all
the wrong books.
Horribly written. Yeah, I know. Or they're really, really, really well written, but they just didn't scare me. Some of Shirley Jackson's kind of can sort of do that at times, but that's just an example off the top of my mind. I did read one a few years ago, The Cabin at the End of the World. That was fairly well written, and it was equally as disturbing. So that's a pretty good one. And again, I do this every October, and sometimes I forget. Rosemary's Baby is actually well written and scary. So I like that a lot. I haven't seen the movie, but so that was a real treat to be shocked by the plot twist in terms of that. So that's top quality. And a lot of the other stuff has just been very middle of the road, meh. I'm glad I read them because it was October, but that was it.
Paul Tremblay, writer of Cabin at the End of the World, has blurbed this book, says it's great.
Yes, you know, that's right.
That we're going to read. It's got a lot. He has a book in a story in a Jeff and Ann Vandermeer collection, Stephen Graham Jones, called the collection is called The New Weird. It's very good. It's if you happen to chance upon that story, that's the only thing of his I've read by him, but it's very good. So
is it in the horror genre
weird,
or not?
Like, something's not quite right here. You know, maybe it's horror, maybe it's not. Maybe for some folks it's horror. Maybe
Well,
for me, it kind of fits in that weird fiction category pretty perfectly.
I'll shout out Tessa Fontaine, her Instagram. She's an author and also went to UA, and I had the privilege of hanging out with her a few times. She's great, and she recommended this book that we're going to read for October about The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones. Is that right, Stephen Graham Jones? Am I getting his name right?
I believe so, yeah.
So, yeah, she recommended it on her Instagram, saying that it inspired her to, you know, give her some ideas on how to lay out her new book she's working on, and she thought it was a great book. So I took her word for it and found that it was a blend of horror and literary work, and I thought that's what I usually like around October 1. I roped you guys into it, and hopefully we can rope some listeners into it, and we can you guys can send us questions if you're reading along, and we can answer them once we've start preparing for that podcast. That's going to be the October 27th podcast. But anyway, that's good. Today, we're going to talk all COVID. All COVID.
All COVID all the time, just like CNN.
Lib Fear Fest. Here we go. I'm feeling pretty good. How's COVID going? You guys are out in public more than me.
We're in the shit.
Yeah. Were you in the shit? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in the shit.
For those that don't know, I do teach high school in my spare time. And I mean, I do feel relatively safe, and I've been doing it for 4 weeks now, and I'm either had it and was asymptomatic or haven't gotten it. So I'm still hoping for the best here. It looks like it's okay for me, but we are all wearing masks and we are all socially distanced, and they've created a schedule. So only half the classes are there per day, and then the next day it's the next half. So I think if we stick to that until COVID either goes away or is, you know, vaccinated or whatever, I think we'll be fine. I just hope they don't rush into, forget it, you're good, don't wear the masks anymore, and we'll put everybody there, all 30 kids in the same room. And
I'm sure public health officials in the state of Alabama are on it. Yeah, which it.
Yeah, we are.
So you still letting Andy roll around in COVID?
We are talking Alabama.
Is that still going on?
She's doing fine. Speaking of my daughter, 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah, but like, do you still have that big? You still
what
got
do you mean
that
rolling
big,
around
that big puddle of COVID out in the backyard, and you just let her just roll around in it like a dog?
Oh, that's piss. That's not COVID. That's just piss.
Pipe's got to empty somewhere, Donovan.
Yeah,
this is Alabama we're talking about.
So if you guys would, these guys can see me. We are on video. I'm gonna hold up a doll, and you guys just show me where COVID has bothered you. Okay.
You want me to pull my lungs out or what?
Here we are. We're going to talk. We are actually going to get some.
This is the most like group work. One person didn't do the homework situation. Like we're just kind of talking around.
Everything I wanted to say today was about
no
Charlie Kaufman and one of my favorite community jokes, which is, yeah, we get it, Charlie Kaufman. Some of us have work in the morning.
This is us standing in front of the class, and the professor's kind of looking at us like, maybe if we can make them laugh.
Hey, I did my slides.
Hey, I've been there, man.
I was gonna say you probably
on both
you're
ends,
on the receiving end of it.
Oh yeah,
more
absolutely.
Than the giving end, probably now.
I think we all did do one thing for quote unquote homework. We did all listen to the new Springsteen song. Now we probably would have anyway. I imagine that's why I thought it would be a good idea. But we've got new releases down the pike that I want to talk about with sincerity. First, let's just start with Bruce Springsteen. He announced this weekend came out this week with a song, a letter for you, and he's really happy about it, apparently, boasting online that he and the E Street Band got together in his New Jersey farmhouse or recording
basement,
studio.
New Jersey.
Yeah, his basement, his recording studio, and they knocked out an album in 5 days. They cut it all live, supposedly, so... we've all listened to A Letter For You. I will open the floor, and then I got thoughts on this.
It sounds good, right? Like, the energy seems up on it. Like you can tell that, I mean, I don't know how late period Springsteen is not necessarily what I'm reaching for over and over again, right? When I think of his, just because he's had so many good songs and so many good albums. But as far as, like, something to throw on in the car... It sounds like there's some real pep to it. You know, these old guys are jamming. Can you imagine what it's like to be Bruce Springsteen in New Jersey? I mean, he's basically God. Like,
that's we played in Asbury Park one time. And have y'all ever heard the Howard Stern bit where he's like, they're playing a clip of Bruce talking in concert, and then they kind of riff on it, and it's like, you know, Dad said I had long hair, and he said, come here, son, I'm going to kiss you. And it just like goes from there, and it just gets so weird and so disturbing. But we listened to that riding through Asbury Park, and then we're like quoting it out loud and making each other laugh. And it's like, well, shit, he could be around any one of these corners listening to us.
Beat your ass.
Yeah, which he totally could.
Oh, yeah. It was funny. He's a fit young man.
Yeah. No, I would not tangle with Bruce. Some music folks were kind of like, you know, the PR spin of we got together and did it in 5 days. Like sometimes that can cover up for substance in a way. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't matter. Talking like that, it's like, you know, this is also a man who didn't want to hear the stick hit the snare drum famously. He only wanted the sound of the snare. So like he has been at both extremes here. In terms of his production. And sometimes you kind of worry, like, why are we talking about how you made this? So it'll be interesting for the whole, you know what I mean? For the whole record to kind of see, because that energy is fun, you're right. But, and if any band in America has earned the right to dive into that energy, it's definitely these guys. So it'll be interesting to see how that holds up across a record.
I think Matt Patton made the joke online that it took them 50 years to make a record in 5 days.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good point too. This song to me sounds great. Sounds great. Like all the musicians are excellent. It's mixed well. You know, you're going to get that from someone as professional as Springsteen, but it's a dud. It's kind of a dud, man. It's just lyrically it's a dud. I feel like the energy's there. If they were just different words in place, it would be good. Now, with that said, I think that this song, if it lies somewhere in the middle of a really good album,
but
it's quite fine. It's going to have to be held up by some pretty good songs beyond that.
I'm not sure about it's the lead single, so I'm kind of like, okay.
Which gets into a whole debate about, does the artist always pick the best singles for themselves?
I don't think so, and I'm hoping that's what he's done here. It sounds like a mediocre song from Western Stars, his most recent album that he did alone, but he just added the E Street Band to it. That's exactly what it sounds like to me. And I really like Western Stars. I think it's a pretty good album.
I was kind of feeling the same way, that it sounded more like something on like Wrecking Ball or something, but not like he's actually had some pretty good, like one of the snoozers on, you know, because it's like I think his last, gee, I don't know, 5 or 6 albums at least, there's been like you could make a really good mix out of them, right? Like a really good greatest hits 2015 to 2020, because there's just some filler on there. And yeah, this one was I as you were talking about the lyrics, I was struggling to remember the lyrics because they just didn't register.
Yeah, he makes a point to rhyme sunshine and rain with all my pain or something. It's just very undercooked lyrically, I think.
Which is a shame, because you know when Bruce is firing, you know, we did the, you know, a couple weeks back, right, our album art one, which got me thinking about Nebraska, and just how many like not even like the famous or big lines or the famous or big songs on Nebraska, but if you look at that lyric sheet, there, I mean, when he writes it, he's got such an eye for he's not overly detailed. He'll throw in just like a little detail that just brings it all home.
I was thinking about that when I was listening to this new song, Letter to You. I was thinking how it has none of that going. It has none of that slice of life stuff. He's just talking about, and I think the letter's fucking literal. I think he's saying, I sat down and wrote a letter and things aren't so hot right now. It's just not a good lyrically song. Really good music song.
It sounded good. Like, that was my first thought. Like, wow, this sounds good. Like, they've got some energy. And if you played it live, maybe I, you know, would blow my ears out so much I wouldn't care anymore.
And I'll stand up for Wrecking Ball. I really like that album. Now, High Hopes was around that same era, and I did not like that album. So this album could be a Wrecking Ball for me or a High Hopes for me. And those are the opposite ends of the spectrum of late era Bruce Springsteen.
I've got This is just my like Bruce Springsteen thing now, because my friend Joel is like, I don't like any Bruce Springsteen songs except for one. He likes Girls in Their Summer Clothes off of Magic.
That's a fantastic album.
And he's like, and I like it because it sounds like a Magnetic Fields song. And every time I listen to it now, I'm like, yeah, it kind of does. So it'll change the way
one he does Springsteen it. Song. That's it.
That's all, is that one?
He's just not a Springsteen fan.
Hmm.
Adam, you are the musician of the bunch. You're the guy who's actually used to putting recordings in down more often than either of us. What are you hearing in this track and not hearing? And what do you want if he continues releasing singles or the whole album pretty soon? What do you want out of it?
I'm not going to lie to you, Blaine. I didn't do the homework on this one.
I think I'm the only person here who did everything I was supposed to.
Would you like me to just sing it for you since we legally can't play it?
I'll tell you this. I'll tell you that my immediate reaction, like when I... Because he kind of snuck it into the world, right? It was originally...
Yeah, like Thursday, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it appeared as a pre-order on his website before it was like officially announced. And maybe it says something about the last few Springsteens that I didn't... I listened to music that day and again on Friday and again on Saturday, and I just didn't... There was even like the impetus, like, I need to listen to this. And it feels like more of a commitment. Because every time he comes out with something, it's kind of like, well, now, which way is the wind blowing in this historic? There's kind of a list of artists like that. Like, I mean, I would put...
Yeah, like who?
I think any, for lack of a better term, and not to use this as a dismissive genre, but any classic rock kind of, any legendary person, it's kind of like, are we... Because now everything feels like a plus or minus column to their overall legacy, even though that's kind of, or it's just like, oh, this is just later day, it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it doesn't feel vital. Like, if there was a new, I'll say, I haven't listened to War on Drugs in a while, and like, I listened to some of their stuff over the weekend. If there was a new War on Drugs track, I'm stopping what I'm doing and going to listen to it. Or, you know, any of these other kind of like more current bands. This is a long way of explaining away the fact that I didn't listen, but it's kind of been, even with like I listened to the Dylan, it wasn't like I stopped what I was doing and went and listened, because it still does feel like there's like a level of reverence with it. Like, I got to be in the right headspace for it, blah, blah, blah. A very long way of saying, no, I did not do the homework.
I did like Western Stars, and Springsteen's coming out with a new album, I guess October 14th or so. I don't know how correct I am on the date, but the whole thing will be out then. Another group that's putting out, not a new album, but an album, is Wilco is re-releasing Summer Teeth. For guys like me, that's kind of a big deal. You can't get it on vinyl right now, and they're doing a re-release, and here's where my gripe comes in, and I start to get pissed off. They're only re-releasing it in this like 4 LP bundle. Like, just give me the regular version and then give me that as an option, right? And it's $99. I just can't do that.
Am I correct in that you get 40 extra songs? Like 40 extra like outtakes and demos, which is cool. Like, if you're a super collector, which I guess this is who it's aimed at, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But have you ever, like, you know, like REM was releasing like those deluxe sets, and there's a lot of cool stuff on there. But sometimes you're like, oh, it's like a less good version of the song I just heard. Like, you're not really gonna sit down and listen to it every time. Although REM released a bunch of live shows on there.
But when REM did that, they did give you the option of buying just the one new remastered album that hasn't been on vinyl in 25 years. This is just a 4 album, and I think one side is a complete show from a record store in 99, and that's really cool, and who wouldn't want that? But I'm not going to pay $99 just to get a remastered version of Summer Teeth. I just want just the regular front and back album or double album, whatever it was, of Summer Teeth. I love those songs, and I'd like to have them included on the shelf here, and the rest can be saved for Spotify, in my opinion. But I don't know. Summer Teeth's great. Such a great album.
You know, it might be my... I think it's my favorite Wilco album.
Mm. This is... I didn't want to be the first one to overrate Summer Teeth on the
I
program.
I think it may be mine too.
I think it's just
not a popular choice in the Wilco canon. It's, like it's people tend to either go to one side or the other of Summer Teeth and never Summer Teeth.
It's the one that I like reach for almost the most, if that makes sense, where you're just like, if I just am not thinking about what I want to hear, I just want to hear something. Like, yes, this stuff is hitting real good.
I mean, if you were to tell me that Summer Teeth being there or Yankee Hotel Foxtrot were your favorite Wilco albums, I wouldn't
you
argue
make a
against you.
Very solid argument for any of those. Well,
so if forced, I think I still would say, I think Yankee Hotel Foxtrot might be.
Yeah, I mean that's tough to argue with. I mean that is such a work of.
It's great.
I don't know if I didn't choose that, it would be because I've heard it so many times. You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That Summer Teeth is so. I didn't realize that you couldn't get just the album on vinyl anymore.
No, and I've looked and scoured online. You can, but it'd be like $150 off of some.
Wow,
some guy.
I did not realize. I thought that up until recently they were still selling on their website.
Huh? Maybe I need to do a recheck. But as far as I know, that's why it's not on my. Like I've got all of their albums. I've got Being There, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, like their newest one, Ode to Joy. But
that one was good.
I thought it was okay.
That one was pretty good.
It's really low key.
It is.
It's really, really low key. It's a late night listen.
Totally.
It's a chill listen, but there's nothing wrong with it. Nope.
No, I like that one.
And they even used one of those songs for like a commercial that kept repeating about a month ago. Did you notice that?
It was a Corona commercial.
Yeah.
And I can't tell if it's actually Tweety singing or if it's like a recreation of the song, which would be a very.
No, it's him.
Is it?
I think so.
He has that famous quote where he talks about selling out, the concept of selling out. Like if Volkswagen wants to use my song and I say no, and my dad finds out about it when his dad was still living, who like worked on train yards his whole life. Like, well, they were going to give me, you know, something. Some part of $100,000 to use the song a few times, but I said no because I have artistic integrity. It's like my dad would want to beat the shit out of me.
What a great notion. I'm glad we're getting away from that. You know, in the 90s when I was growing up and we had Nirvana and Pearl Jam and all those guys, and you know, don't sell out. Don't you dare let a commercial use your song. Whatever.
Which is hilarious because that itself is like a privileged flex. Right?
Absolutely.
Because like that means that you live in a time where not that they can know that they were in a rare moment for music, but that's like pretty easy to say when you're selling millions of $20 CDs. You know what I mean? And now it's like any lifeline that you can get, which is a funny thing about Wilco and thinking about the reasoning that they would sell a five piece vinyl bundle thing like that. I mean, they're hyper serving a very, very dorky audience, right? I mean, like the joke, it's kind of like the old Onion joke about Yo La Tengo, like fire at Yo La Tengo concert claims 50 record store clerk lives. Like, that's kind of like the Wilco fan base. And it's been funny to watch them, Tweety and Wilco as a whole, kind of like, I don't know, they are just like churning on the product side of things. Like I saw that they have like their own mask. Like you can get like a COVID mask that's themed from, you know, he's been doing these live streams from home where it's just like his family hanging out. And it's kind of like the Tweety official mask. All these things are just funny to me for people that are like, you know, people want to make Wilco like these are serious artists, like capital S and A. And, you know,
yeah,
I think he's holding a lot looser to that concept while also making $100 reissues. Yeah.
Hey, it's a job, right?
It is a job. And I think that's what's funny about, like, you said, like, Ode to Joy, these records that just keep coming out. I mean, he just shows up every day to the loft at 10 a.m. and starts working. And, like, if something happens, it happens, and he puts it out. That's a funny model of, I'm getting into, like, music business dork stuff here at this point. But, like, he's just very workmanlike about it and not being precious. And, yeah, if people want to buy his records, then just keep making music.
On the other side, and the way I think you should do it, now who am I? I'm a consumer. But the way you should do it is the Tom Petty camp is releasing Wildflowers next month or at the very beginning of November. You can pre-order it now. But, and they did it right, in my opinion. They give you the nice reissue with a little bit of extra stuff, and you can get that for $35. And then you can go up to the 150 version. Then you can go up to the four, and there's just like these four tiers of music and vinyl you can get, and it gets really stupid and ridiculous at the top, and even beyond the $35 one. But at least they give you that one that's like $34.99, and where you get the album back on vinyl, or if it was ever on vinyl, I'm not so sure Wildflowers was ever on vinyl. And you're getting that, but you're getting plus a extra disc of some songs that weren't ever released. And some of those sound like they might be worth listening to. If they release Girl on LSD on that album, I mean, that alone makes it worth it. That was like a B-side for You Don't Know How It Feels single way back in 1994 or 93, whatever year that 96, whatever album. Anyway, I can remember having that cassette single, and you had Girl on LSD, but that was the only place you could listen to it.
I've never heard that song.
That's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. Those multiple price points. Have we talked about on this show the Broken Record podcast? That it's a Malcolm Gladwell thing, and Rick Rubin does a bunch of the interviews, but there's one where just the two of them talk about Tom Petty.
Yeah, and I've listened to that. You turned me on to that. We haven't talked about it on air, no.
But go on. A strong recommend, since we're kind of in the music portion right now, if you are going to go and get the Wildflowers thing or even listen to the unreleased stuff, if it hits Spotify, I assume it will. Hearing Rick Rubin talk about, you know, he said we basically had to, they could have done a double record, but did a single. And he said the other songs are just as good. It just became about how tight can we make this all fit together.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they came up with what I think is one of his best collective works. But I'm just, after hearing that podcast especially and hearing kind of how they went about the whole thing, I strongly recommend going and finding that for a listen and then checking those songs out. Because most of the time it's like, well, if it didn't make the record, there's a reason why.
Right.
But this one, this setup has been, and it wasn't, they recorded this podcast years ago, so it's not like he was doing promo for this release.
Uh-huh. Well, I think maybe Petty, Springsteen, and Dylan of those classic rock folks, that those three are the most famous, where if it didn't end up on the album, it still could be quite good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's moments like we just came from Wilco Talk where, you know, like the I Am Trying to Break Your Heart documentary versions of a few of those songs are so good. Like maybe they're rockier, maybe they're quieter. Like I want to hear those too. But in terms of completed decision made production, yeah, I'm with you. Those three, and especially to get what I again think is one of his best works. It's like, oh, well, it could have been a double record. Here's the rest of the songs. That's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. That is. And I am excited about that. I've already pre-ordered my little basic copy of the vinyl. That I'm pretty stoked. But in the Flaming Lips came up with an album this weekend. If I'm not mistaken, it's been this weekend, a Friday. So any Flaming Lips fans between the three of us?
Feel like listening to a new Flaming Lips album feels exhausting. I don't know why. That's my response to it. Because I love some of their earlier stuff. But just like as I slowly turn into my father, like probably their last two or three have just been like, what is this shit? Like, you know, it's like, oh, let's get it. This is probably misrepresenting it, but like, oh, let's get as high as possible and just do whatever we feel like. Like, that's, do whatever you want. Like, that's fine.
I'm 100% with you. Adam, what are you in Flaming Lips at all?
I am, but I'm the same way where you talked about making like a playlist out of recent Springsteen releases and getting a good record. I mean, this, if there was a band to do that with, you know, there has been good stuff. And obviously they have made great pop songs in the past. I mean,
absolutely.
But I've heard a lot of people saying, like I saw Patterson Hood post this is one of the best Flaming Lips records that he's heard. And it's been well received, or seems to have been. I haven't read any like in-depth reviews, but just kind of the surface level social media chatter is very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I bring it up. I've been seeing some stellar write-ups on it, even harking it back to
Soft Bulletin.
Soft Bulletin type
if,
record.
If it's actually, which based on, I was going to say the same thing, based on the buzz I've been seeing, it's like, oh, okay, maybe I'll listen to it. But just like, I'm looking,
yeah,
I just Googled their discography lately, and it's just like stuff that I was like, oh yeah, I heard something from that and that.
Their last few I did not find enjoyable at all, but then again, I'm 40.
They've done anything that I seriously enjoy in maybe almost 10 years.
You know what, it struck me as odd to know that Wayne Cohn is 60. Does that blow anyone else's mind?
A little, but only, it doesn't, because I know how long he's been at it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to do the math of like, oh yeah, he's been doing this for a long, long time. But
oh, for sure.
He's been doing it longer than I've been alive.
Right. He's been in the bubble for quite some time.
Pretty literally in his case,
the,
right?
The original. You know, Wayne was just trying to tell us. Mm-hmm. I'll always remember seeing, I think this was on, like, my dad liked to watch Leno, and like the Flaming Lips were on, and like Wayne Coyne was like singing through the bullhorn or something. And my dad, like, just my dad, like, that was the first time that I just seen my dad, like, not be able to wrap his head around something. Just be like, what is this? Like,
I don't get it.
Which is weird, because I'm almost willing to bet that was the same performance I saw, and it inspired me to buy that disc. Was it Yoshimi Battles the Robots album?
Probably. It would have been around that time period.
And I was, and still, he's saying, do you realize?
That sounds right.
Yeah, I think so.
And I thought, man, that song is actually fantastic. And I went and bought the CD the next day. All right. So, and I have listened to the one song that Flaming Lips did with Casey Musgraves. It's available to listen to. I think the whole album is actually available now, but I don't know. Something sounded a little disjointed hearing her voice next to his.
I thought it was fine. I didn't love it. Like, they did that, I don't know, Flaming Lips and Fwens album, or one or two of those. And they're just like, Miley Cyrus was on there and other people. And it's just, it doesn't sound good. I didn't care for it. I don't want to listen to it again.
Yeah, nothing against Miley Cyrus, but maybe so. I don't want to hear her sing with the Flaming Lips.
I don't want to blame it on her. I'm going
to
blame it
on tell you, the friend they need to get in. If y'all are ever feeling down, go on YouTube and pull up Nels Klein playing She's So Heavy with the Flaming Lips.
Okay.
Rips the space-time continuum apart. Like when they drop in on the... Man, so good. Anyway...
Yeah, well,
who's hey, in that song, who's heavy?
Like, aside from the giveaway and the title?
Yeah, who's heavy?
Who's the she? Is that what you're asking?
Who's the, yeah, is this, is it heroin?
Oh, well, that's another debate for another time. What we'll do is we'll, let's go into a quick break here, and we'll come back on the other side and talk a little bit about the Dune trailer that just came out, so. Okay, here's an announcement for the coming weeks in case you missed it earlier. We're going to do an episode based on your pop culture questions around September 24th, I think it might be. So drop us a line, comment on the website, hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or just send your questions to thealabamatake@gmail.com. We'll rattle them off, give our best answers, give you credit. That's on a coming episode of Taking It Down late September. So get them in now. Don't forget, if you want to be a part of the Taking It Down Book Club, our first episode for that airs October 27th, and we're going to be reading The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones. Get in on that. Get your copy and begin reading soon. If you're truly impressed, or if you like what we do and you want to hear more, you can always go to thealabamatake.com. But you can also, while there, click on Shop, venture into the Buy Me a Coffee, where we have a site, much like Patreon, that you can help for the cost of the podcast and the website. If nothing else, we hope you enjoy us and wouldn't mind sharing or telling a friend about the podcast and the website. So let's get back into the show, and we'll start talking about the Dune trailer. All right, guys, before we get into the Dune trailer, so college football started dripping from the faucet, and it turned more into a pour this weekend, I would think. It's not quite the deluge we're used to, but did you watch any college football?
Because it came on kind of after my morning of soccer, I watched a bit of the Notre Dame game, since it's on NBC. it was fine. It was weird to see people in the crowd. At this point, I've gotten so used to watching sports without crowds. It's like, oh yeah, there's our good American pretend nothing's happening, but also kind of have to address it. Very fun. I don't know. There was Like even say like I've been pestering you guys about Hard Knocks. I watched Hard Knocks this year. It just wrapped up. And usually I remember we were watching it this last Tuesday, the final episode, that by the time, you know, we talked about Last Chance U as the primer for the football season. Well, Hard Knocks is truly like by the time the last episode airs, usually it's after college football has already started. And so I'm kind of like, hey, NFL, whatever. I'm just like still buzzing midweek off of the first big week in the college football. And it, you know, I did not find myself missing anything. Maybe I'll get more into it as the games keep rolling. But, and I saw some people say like, oh, it was nice to just be able to flip around between games on a Saturday. It's like nice to feel some sense of normalcy. I totally get it. Just not psyched on the actual outcome of the game.
Yeah, the ACC is not the most inspiring football to watch. I'm sorry, all you ACC fans out there. I watched the Georgia Tech Florida State game, which was good just to watch Florida State fans kind of slowly melt down in the stands
and not adhere to social distancing at all.
You know, yeah,
I think COVID is the 12th man on a lot of these teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Tulane USA game, University of South Alabama game, was fun as hell too. That was I've found
the old battle of I-10. Yeah,
it was great. I found actually a lot of like the non-power conference games have been really fun. And then absolutely hands down, game of the weekend: Arkansas State taking on Kansas State. Kansas State's coach, right? He used to be, I can't think of his name, but he used to be North Dakota State's coach, right? And it's like, if you want to ruin your weekend, schedule North Dakota State against you, unsuspecting FBS team. They'll mess you up. And then they schedule, I know Arkansas State isn't quite the same thing because they're not FCS, but it's like, what are you doing? You didn't have to do this to yourself. You've fallen into your own trap. And then they lost. Arkansas State, they're fired up. I saw them whip Kansas State, and they just set out for the Jayhawk Stadium. They're not even scheduled to play Les Miles. They were just in a herd.
Les Miles is hurting right now, right? And they Kansas looked terrible last night.
Yeah,
right?
But that's because Les Miles forgot he was supposed to play that day. Like if you told me that like someone woke up Les and he's like Les. You got a game today. And, you know, like he's in his underwear or something in like a trailer that's not his or whatever. Like, oh, darn it. Those kids again. You know, like the music starts playing. That's probably absolutely what happened.
It's good to know that COVID isn't just messing up my schedule either.
It's messing up everyone's schedule.
I bring up the college football because I just found myself for the first time since being a kid, I guess, and being more worried about what G.I. Joe I was going to go buy versus the game. I just didn't care. I didn't like, this doesn't matter. That's how that was the overall feeling I had. I would walk through the room and the TV would be on, and it was Georgia Tech at Florida State, I think, for the majority of the afternoon. And I would just,
well, it only took 6 hours to get through it.
Yeah. Well, I would mentally shrug my shoulders and think it just doesn't matter. Now, when SEC starts play in 2 weeks, I don't know if I'll have the same feelings. I know I'll watch Alabama. I can't help myself there. But am I still going to have this same idea that when Florida's playing Missouri or Arkansas's playing LSU, am I going to think, it doesn't matter? I don't know. I still can't put my finger on where I am emotionally with college football and NFL.
Walking through a room, though, pre-COVID, Georgia Tech with this offensive line, Florida State with this offensive line, would you be like, this matters deeply? Like, in what universe does FSU Georgia Tech
I probably
matter?
Would have had $20 on it, so it would have mattered quite a bit.
Oh, well, I can fix your problem for you.
Yeah, maybe I just need to start betting on
just
them again.
Mail me $20.
Mail Donovan $20 every weekend. That'd be great.
Well, I want to get some back every now and again.
He'll kick you some.
I'll tell you which one you won for $20.
All right.
You were the winner of Florida State.
And are we feeling that? Okay, I say are we, because it sounds like you guys are a little bit more enthusiastic, or Donovan may be a little bit more enthusiastic than Adam and I, but NFL at all? So today's We record on Sunday, so today's got some NFL games on. There were some on Thursday night. The Chiefs won, right?
Did the Chiefs win, or did they not? I'll probably watch some. And I got to admit that I thought that this season of Hard Knocks was really compelling. I know that show's been around forever, and people kind of know the beats already. But I always love it, and I think them dealing with COVID was very interesting, and them reacting. You know, they had cameras. It was with two teams this year, both of the Los Angeles teams, the Chargers and the Rams, them reacting to the NBA protesting games and kind of making decisions around that and seeing how these conversations actually play out. It kind of, you know, you view them, these leagues, as kind of like a monolith of, it's easy to forget that they're people, you know, but like watching them try to make those decisions was, it was just good TV. I mean, even if you're not a sports person, but NFL, it's a little bit easier for me to stomach this year. I feel like the issues of college athletics were really brought to the forefront. We've talked about that on the show, how kind of messy all that is. And it's, I know that they're psyched to be playing the college guys, or, you know, they want to be there, but it was still, it's still odd to kind of wrap your head around, because it has been so politicized by both sides. There's NFL. These are at least grown men getting paid to play.
Well, that does take me back to one thing from earlier in the first segment. One of the big reasons why I lost some time and wasn't able to watch the movie was I got sucked into the NBA.
Oh, man.
I got sucked into the two Boston Celtics games this week. One they lost in double overtime in the game 7 that they won. And it's so weird to not be into college football that much right now at all. My brain isn't there, but I am almost 100% in the NBA. Like, I'll keep one of those games on. So,
well, we've been so programmed to like a sports calendar that right now you can wake up and watch. I know this wouldn't be a popular choice maybe, but you can wake up and have your coffee and watch the Tour de France if you want to. It makes some compelling television every now and again. You could watch, until recently, NBA games midday. Now you can watch playoff NBA. You could watch the Premier League, and you can catch a football game that night.
And baseball. And baseball. You're forgetting baseball.
Yeah. So like, true. How is this all happening at the same time? It's just like, I only have so much energy to go around.
I think there might be a NASCAR race today.
I'm sure there is.
Like, the NBA finals, like some of the best NBA games, do not usually coincide with some of the worst college football games. So your brain kind of has some breathing room there.
That's true. All right, guys, let's get into the Dune trailer. This is something I imagine we all watch. Did we all watch this or not?
Yes. Cautious Optimism is the name of the game here.
Well, yeah, as soon as I saw it had a trailer released, I hit play on my little smartphone because I'm pumped. Read Dune when I was in seventh grade, and read the second one and half of the third novel and dropped it from there.
That is exactly the same. I read all of the second one. I quit halfway through the third one. I never finished it.
Yeah, thank you. I heard they just even got worse. But Dune has been tried at several times. There's been the sci-fi version, which I think was a miniseries of sorts. Yeah. I never watched it.
It's fine.
There's the, of course, very famous, or maybe infamous, David Lynch 84 version?
84, I think, yeah.
Yeah. And I liked that version.
Really?
But then again, yeah, I kind of like it in a weird cult way.
Yeah, it's weird.
Have you seen it, obviously. Adam, did you ever catch the David Lynch version of Dune?
I haven't, which is, I mean, I should watch.
I don't think you have to.
It's the most un-Lynch movie he ever made, I guess.
And aside from Straight Story.
No, I think Straight Story is
more Lynchian than Dune.
Yeah, I think Straight Story is purely... Can we just talk about Straight Story? Possibly my favorite David Lynch.
Hey, well, maybe soon. Yeah, Dune, he sort of stuck with the book, and it's not very Lynchy. There are some Lynchian moments, but they're few and far between in that movie.
It's a whole it's a whole movie where you're like, all of these things, it's like if you're making like a mix or something, and it's like, all of these ingredients are great, and then you mix it, and it's like, they're just not clicking. Is that fair to say, Blaine? Okay. Would you say, or am Makes I misrepresenting? Sense.
No, because I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I'm surprised, because I think, just like as a movie, I don't think it's entirely successful, and I know that's not entirely in David Lynch's hands.
And I guess I watched it in like 86, I found, you know, so I watched it as a kid, and I thought, oh, and I had read the book, and then I just watched this, and I thought, this is fantastic. They made a movie out of a book I read, and it was it's kind of bad, but it's also kind of good. The voiceovers have always enticed me for both comedy and other weird reasons. You know, you get these moments where it's just a camera on Kyle MacLachlan's face and you hear spice, spice. And it's just like, what is going on in this scene?
I'll tell you the great thing I think what's great about it is, like, in the era of mega franchises where it's like, the movie, whatever happens, it's probably going to be completely safe, right? Like, who let David Lynch do this? Like, it's great for that.
Every time that I see a David Lynch thing, I'm like, who let him do this? Who gave him enough money to do this?
Right? It's great. That's the great thing about
God love him for, like, doing it.
Yeah.
Whatever else it is, like, it's not, like, safer. It ain't Star Wars, no. You know?
I wish they would give him an Adventures movie or a Star Wars or something.
Star Wars? David Lynch does a Star Wars?
Oh, my goodness.
It would have to be, like, you completely, like, whatever you say goes, Mr. Lynch.
Oh,
like,
yeah, he wouldn't do it otherwise.
Whatever the Showtime, whatever his contract with Showtime was, like, give him that and let him go nuts and on. Don't even give him a main star.
It was unfathomable what all he got away with that Showtime Twin Peaks The Return.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But this movie.
What are we going to do, the David Lynch episode?
Oh, we could, because I love it.
We're having more fun with David Lynch than we are with.
Well, the guy who's directing the new Dune is fantastic, so that's good. He did a rock.
So, yeah. I was just about to ask, have you liked his previous movie? There's three of his movies that basically the last three he did. I've loved all three of them.
So we're talking Denis Villeneuve, and he did Arrival that I adored. I really adore that movie. And what are some of his other movies? Maybe I'm just blanking out here.
He directed Sicario.
Oh yeah, fantastic movie.
Which I thought was excellent. And then is this his most recent? I think his most recent movie is 2-ish years old now, and that was Blade Runner 2049.
That's right.
Some folks did not like that. I personally liked it an awful lot.
I never seen it.
I thought it was great. Everything except, what's his face? Jared Leto. Jared Leto's in it. Big, big casting mistake. He's boring every second he's on the screen. But a lot of stuff, it's kind of slow. The pacing is odd. There's some great. It's just, I think Ryan Gosling's fantastic. There's some just there's weird stuff happening with bodies, and there's this great scene where, like, Ryan Gosling is a replicant, and he's got a girlfriend. It's a computer system, so they hire, you know, a woman to come in and she'll be the body for the computer system, right? And it's Villeneuve did the, I think that, however you say his name, I'm sorry, Denis, the way that, like, the computer and the woman beneath it are slipping in and out of sync with each other is just an absolutely, it's a great scene. It's absolutely fascinating. And I had the experience of seeing it in the movie theater with a bunch of, like, 14 and 15 year olds who are not ready to see this movie yet. So behind me, as I'm watching this, like, slow, droney movie, I'm hearing, ew, gross. Who is that? It was great. And then the mom at the end of it goes, I'm sorry, kids, I didn't read the reviews. So it was awesome.
That's a classic theater.
There's a lot of comparisons now on the cinematography of that Blade Runner to what's going on in California right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sure. It was actually Roger Deakins who did 1917, did
that makes
the
sense.
Cinema for 2049. And I believe he won his first Oscar for it because he was back-to-back with 1917, right?
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I bring up all that to say that if you watch this trailer for Dune, and it stars Timothy Chalamet.
The boy.
As Paul Atreides. That's Timothy. We've got Oscar Isaac as his dad, I think. We've got just a star-studded cast. Zendaya plays one of the people that live on the planet Dune, Arrakis. Who else am I missing? Lots of stars. I mean, it's star-studded. We got Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Josh Brolin.
Is it Alexander Sarsgaard who's Baron Harkonnen?
Is he in the trailer?
I think so. I think he's wearing makeup. Dave Bautista, who was also in 2049 in a small role. He's pretty good, actually. He's not bad.
I will just say that this movie has me more excited than I think any movie of 2020 does, and I hope that we get a chance to see it in a theater, because I don't know if we're gonna. I don't know if that's going to be a possibility, even in December, but.
It would be a shame not to see this on a big screen.
Absolutely.
I think.
Gosh, it would be just an utter shame. Jason Momoa is in this.
Oh, that's right.
Rebecca Ferguson and Javier Bardem is in this movie.
It's a stacked cast.
It is stacked. Your director's good. The story's intriguing. And so much of the trailer really visually looked like an updated version of the David Lynch film.
See, they can't say... Jihad, gotta say there's a crusade coming now, which was an interesting note, right? Having to change a couple little things.
Yeah, I guess. That's a shame, but it makes sense.
I suppose. But yeah, it was, you know, in a weird way, I'm feeling this way, almost like the Bruce Springsteen song, where I'm like, well, it looks great. You know, like, if the E Street Band is like the cinematography, I'm like, well, that's nailed. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little worried, mm-hmm. like they're gonna... It can be, it's so easy to spin the like Dune into like just like goofiness and mysticism. And I think sometimes that there's a goofiness that works when you're it can be not goofy when you're watching it, right? Something that doesn't come across as too goofy when you're reading it, right? When you're imagining it, when you've immersed yourself, is just unutterably goofy when you see it. And I hope they don't fall too much into that.
Do y'all have opinions on Timothy Chalamet, who's going to be carrying the movie?
I think he's quite good.
On.
I liked him a lot in Little Women.
I
thought he was very good. You know, the only thing is, he is young. He looks younger than he is. So I think it's all going to depend on his acting. But, you know, at least... if they're following the book pretty closely, Paul Atreides is supposed to be a very young man, at least at the beginning. Maybe a teenager? I don't exactly remember.
Yeah, I think it's a good choice. I think he'll be fine.
He's good. He's a good actor.
I think he's a good actor, and in fact, I got incredibly stoked to hear that he is going to be Bob Dylan in a new Bob Dylan
movie. I can see that.
Hands down. He's learning to play guitar and all that, so... he could totally pull that off.
Absolutely.
I'm pretty pumped to even see stills or even a teaser trailer from that when it comes down the line.
So
I think that's probably a year away or
so. I've got a question for you, Blaine, about this Dune movie since you've read Dune. Mm-hmm. And we've kind of talked about how, and I agree with you, for you, one of the most interesting parts, and they didn't go this way, but if when it was seeming like Game of Thrones was an environmental fable, that was very intriguing. Are you hoping that we're going to get more, because the Dune is an environmental in a lot of ways, you know, it's about the ecology of the planet, and it's about the way, you know, there's a main character there who's in the book, who's a meteorologist, who's trying to figure out why is the planet the way that it is, and can we change the planet?
And the politics that affect such environmentalism.
And the politics that affect
the capitalism, if you will.
Yeah. Because, you know, there's a pretty strong implication that if you change the planet, you change its most valuable resource. Do you hope they, because I think you could do this and just shoot it as a straight adventure movie. Do you think we're going to get any of the sort of the environmental politics of it? Especially, I felt like in 2049, we had environmental politics just by way of it's being set in a ruined world where the sea is kind of being kept at bay by walls. I wonder if Might he dip into that? Would you like it if he did?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it makes it from a good movie into a great movie if you do that. Yeah. I'm hopeful for this one, and I will be watching it wherever I can safely, and that might be 4 months after its release at home. I don't know.
I'm excited for it to get the direct-to-Quibi release so we can all watch it on, watch it on our smartphones.
We can watch it in five-minute chunks. Yeah, so there you go. I think we're all pretty pumped about that one. Anything else on Dune or Dune-related?
I'm excited. It's going to be good. There were,
yeah, I'm pumped.
It was the trailer had everything that I would want a trailer to have.
It even had a sandworm.
It did.
It had an awesome sandworm. There were moments when they kind of had the scope of the desert was revealed that kind of reminded me of, you know, when the first Star Wars, the Disney Star Wars was coming out and they had that Star Destroyer laid out on Tatooine and like you're kind of like, "Oh, wow, this is now they can do this." You know, like you've always like thought in those big terms when they've been able to see it. And I was reminded of that feeling watching that.
And they had this moment where Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet are walking up a dune hill or a sand hill. And in the distance is civilization of some sort on the planet on fire. And boy, did that look familiar too. I saw that and I thought to myself, did he just go to California and film that scene right now?
What a week to come out.
So yeah, I think that he has to touch on that. I think it would be dumb not to, but
I hope he does. I'm wondering how safe does the
how
studio
safe he plays it?
I mean, how safe does the studio, there's got to be a lot of money in this movie, right? Like the more money's in something, the safer it becomes, right?
Yeah, so true.
So how I don't know. How much of whatever gets through?
We are excited about that. In fact, I have been considering rereading. I don't know how much time I'll have, but I'd like to reread the book before watching the movie. It's been, 30, 35 years since I've read the book. So, but it stuck with me.
I wonder how it will strike you, because I read it at about your age when you said you read it, and then I read it again as an adult. And I liked it the second time around. It was just a different experience.
I imagine entirely, right?
Oh, yeah. For one thing, I mean, so much of what's cool about it is it feels like the universe has depth to it. And also there's things that you kind of sort of have to figure out. And just coming into it like more as an adult, more familiar with science fiction tropes and things like that, it was like, okay, maybe it doesn't feel quite as mysterious. I'm able to figure it out a little bit more.
Yeah, as a kid, I read it for the adventure, and as an adult, I imagine I'd read it for the political intrigue.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you would.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, thanks for joining us. That's it. We're going to be back at you next week, guaranteed to be talking about the Netflix movie I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Or or we might just be ending this podcast if I don't watch that. So leave a review for us online. We'll see it. We'll laugh. We'll love it. We'll hold it, cherish it. Don't forget to ask us your questions in the weeks ahead for the special segment where we're going to provide all kinds of answers to pop culture ideas. Get those to us. Until then, we will be back at you next Tuesday. Subscribe and don't miss a thing. Talk to you then.